community turnout. Unfortunately, our council members aren't used to getting here that early because they can usually find a parking space. So we're getting caught up here a little bit. Let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. We expect Councilman Sturdivant to be joining us shortly. And I will begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Councilwoman Fonzie. Thank you. Let's go ahead and have a roll call.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant is not here at the moment. Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
I will list that. I'll wait for a few minutes to see if he gets in. Otherwise, I'll list him as absent.
Yes, just go ahead and enter into the minutes when he arrives.
Sure.
And that would be just great. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. We will have a roll call on that. However, I do want to just give council and staff a little warning. I want to take some mayoral prerogative and add in either at the end of public comment or just when we hit the individual input from council. I'd like to just have a sentence or two by each person that would share a little bit about what strategic planning meant to you, because I think it's one of the most important things we do in our community. It's coming up. We want the whole community to be involved with shaping our goals for the future of our city and see how we've been doing. So nothing too fancy, just share a thought that you might have of what you see the benefit of that, and we want to kind of crescendo up to that coming up in February, and I'm sure our city manager will talk about that a little later. But with that slight addition, I'll ask for a roll call or a motion for the approval of the agenda.
Also move.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Borbeau and a second by Councilman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We'll move right into some presentations, and we are very honored about all of these we have before us tonight. We're going to begin with a presentation of a police award, and I'm going to turn it over to Chief Haley. Give us the background.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you and the rest of council tonight and present this award on behalf of our department and the California Highway Patrol to Officer Brett Mobley. I wonder if he might step forward. There he is. He was hiding behind a pillar. Come stand next to me. We have the distinct pleasure tonight to present to Officer Mobley something that most of us in law enforcement know, but others are not quite as aware of. We call it the 10851 pin or the 10851 award. You might be asking yourself, what are all those numbers? So we wanted to take a little bit of time to explain what the award is and why it's presented. It is unique to our community. This will be, as far as we know, the first time that someone from our own department has received this award in the history of the Atascadero Police Department. So it is a significant accomplishment, one that we're very proud of. 10851 of the California Vehicle Code is the section that addresses stolen vehicles and vehicle theft. And so several years ago, the California Highway Patrol developed an award system for people who became proficient at recovering stolen vehicles. And there are a couple of different ways that you can get the award. One of them is if you're involved in the investigation of some sort of chop shop operation. Some of you may be familiar with what that is, where stolen vehicles are brought in, they're parted out, and then sold for parts to various vendors. The other way is to actually be involved in the investigation, discovery, and apprehension of individuals involved in vehicle theft. There's two different ways you can obtain the award. One is, come on up to the front, it's okay. You got to be able to take pictures. One is you can be involved in a certain number of investigations where you just recover a stolen vehicle. Oftentimes, stolen vehicles are taken for a short joyride, and then they're left abandoned on the street, and we come across them. And when we come across them, we recover the vehicle and try and return it to the owner after our investigation is concluded. The second way is that you encounter vehicles in which somebody is still driving the stolen vehicle. We are a little more fond of those in law enforcement because sometimes we get to drive really fast with our lights and sirens going when those kinds of things happen, and pursuits are often involved in those types of investigations. You have an opportunity to either have a combination of the two. The most common way that we see is that somebody is responsible for getting what we call three rolling stolens, three where somebody is actually behind the wheel of the vehicle, and then an additional nine that are just recovered without somebody on board. Any combination of those that gets you to the number 12 is deserving of the 10851 award, and it has to happen in a single calendar year. So you can see that it is a substantial amount of work being done by the officers in a calendar year in order to receive this award. I'm pleased to announce that for this award, Officer Mobley was responsible this year for apprehending four individuals who were in the stolen vehicle while he located it, and then he received the rest of the 12 as unoccupied stolen vehicles. So eight stolen vehicles unoccupied and four occupied. It's remarkable in our community. It just doesn't happen. I came from a community of Santa Maria where it was a little more frequent. I haven't seen it in Atascadero. And the first question I got asked is, well, does the fact that he received this award mean that we're having more crime in Atascadero? I'm actually pleased to report that it's quite the opposite. We saw an overall reduction in crime last year, the same time that he was receiving this award. A tremendous, significant reduction in crime, especially given the fact that our neighbors around us in the county all experienced up to and including double-digit increases in property and theft-related crimes. So not only are we going down in crime, but I think the reason for that is because we have officers like Officer Mobley out there doing their best to detect crime early and apprehend those people responsible before they can commit more and more crimes. Many of the vehicles that we located here were not stolen out of Atascadero. They were stolen in other places, and he just happened to be alert and doing his job very well in order to detect and locate them. So for this award, he'll receive from the California Highway Patrol a nice printed certificate, but the thing that he'll be most proud of is a pin that he gets to wear on his uniform with the numbers 10851 on it. So if you ever see one of our officers, I know that we have at least one other officer who wears this pin. He got that in a different community and brought it to us, but I think Officer Mobley will be the first from our department to wear the 10851 pin for work that he's done in our community. So I wonder if you might please join me in congratulating him on a job well done. I'll give him the opportunity maybe to say something. I'm getting the not a chance sign. So we're going to present this award to him, and then I don't know if council wants to reserve a time after where we would take a photograph with him by chance, or we want to do it now.
Come and join you after your presentation, or we'll just come and join you right now for
that
the presentation.
Great.
And before you all leave, if we can also invite one with all of his family that's here to enjoy the moment, that would be very nice. And Terry will take pictures for you and make sure we get them off to family, friends, anybody who helps.
Well, you can all feel a little bit better about your cars out in the parking lot tonight. Great job. We are now going to have another presentation, a joint presentation by police and fire. So I would invite Acting Chief Casey Bryson to join Chief Gerald Haley. And I think we have most of our fire guys here. Do we have our retired chief here. It's good to have him out, as well as our former interim chief. We want you to all partake in this, so I'll let the two chiefs take the lead.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. Glad to be here tonight. I appreciate the opportunity. This is my first council meeting in this position, and I hope I have many more like this where I can honor the fire department and those I work with. So it's very special for me to be able to do this tonight. But I am going to bring them up right away, so I'll start calling you guys out. If you guys come up and join me, we have Captain Scott Hallett, Engineer Tom Little, Firefighter Brandon Roberts, Firefighter Stephen Cochran. This was our engine company out of Fire Station 2, 7592 that night. We have Captain Bill White, Engineer Christopher Robinson, Firefighter Zach Jackson, and Firefighter Nathan Goosens. This was the fire crew out of Fire Station 1. So what we're doing tonight is we're honoring these gentlemen tonight with a crew citation, also called a unit commendation, and it's for the actions that they did on a fire on San Gabriel Road on the 21st of September. So a little bit about this award. The fire department has five different medals. We have a Medal of Valor all the way down to a merit award. The one they're getting tonight, like I mentioned, is the unit commendation. It's given for outstanding performance worthy of recognition, risk to the firefighter's life, exceptional performance in an out-of-ordinary circumstance. And this award, it honors the crew rather than an individual. So the actions that they did together validates this award, and that's why we're giving it to them tonight. So with that, Chief, would you like to bring anybody else up? Or?
Sure. I'll also bring up the officers and dispatchers who are here. If I could get Dispatcher Shannon Neal and Anjanette Ordonez to step forward. They were trying to hide way in the back. And then we have Corporal John Taylor. And I think some of our officers might still be on duty. Chris Hall, Steve Stuckey, and is that all that's here tonight? I'm sorry? I did see him here. There he is. Okay, he's hiding in the back. Officer Sloan, if you would also step forward. For us, the officers involved and dispatchers involved in this incident will be receiving Chief's commendation. I will let Casey do a little bit of a better job explaining the type of incident. I would just like to take one opportunity to mention two things. One, our department believes in partnerships. We talk about it all the time. We have to have partnerships, or we're not able to do our job. There's no way we could do it on our own. And I think tonight is a perfect demonstration of what a deep and beneficial partnership we have with the police department and the fire department here in Atascadero. It's not always that way. Some communities, there's tremendous rivalry. In here, that's not the case. And so the commendation that our people will be receiving is a result of the fire chief recommending them for an award. That's, again, a display of the fact that we're very unified here in the city in how we do things. And then the other thing is, I'll just point out, within the police department, when it was first kind of brought up that the officers and dispatchers might be worthy of the Chief's Commendation Award, there was a number of them within their own number here tonight that kind of said, well, it doesn't really feel like we should get an award for this. We were just doing our job. And that, to me, is a demonstration of just how professional the men and women with the city of Atascadero are, that this type of effort on their part would be seen by them and by their peers as kind of just another day at the office. This was truly an incident worthy of commendation, truly an incident worthy of note. But for them, it was just something we do on a regular basis. And so I think that's worth the mayor and the council being aware of, is that's the kind of people, kind of men and women you have working for you. And I'll turn it back over to Casey.
So you can see it took quite a few people up here to mitigate this incident. This was a structure fire on San Gabriel Road, like I mentioned. It was a fully involved two-story structure with a person trapped on the second floor. So from our dispatchers giving the great information to our fire crews, to the police officers responding and coaching this person to stay in the window, then our engine companies arriving first in and throwing a ladder, getting this person out in under 10 minutes. So it was a well-orchestrated, well-choreographed. These, like Chief said, we were probably just doing our job, but these ones were the lucky ones to be on duty that night, and they used their training, our standard operating procedures, and were able to make this have a happy ending. So a little bit on the incident, we actually have a video that we're going to show. It's a little bit dark at times, a little bit grainy, because it's coming from helmet cam footage, a couple of still photos in there. But a couple things I want you guys to listen for is the great information from our dispatchers telling exactly where this person is as they're responding in the fire engines. You'll see the quick response from APD, and you can see the officers talking to this person in the windowsill. Our fire captain, Scott Hallett, was first in. He gives a great size up. He's doing a mental process of, you know, what he knows is coming as far as resources. He's looking at the fire, reading what the fire is doing. He's reading the building, knowing what the building, how the building's going to react. And then he's coming up with a plan all in a few minutes and giving assignments to everybody else to make this rescue happen like clockwork. So you'll see that. You'll see going right into the rescue mode, throwing that ladder. Then he's giving some tactics over the radio. And one additional thing you'll see is in the middle of all this, all these things are going on, and we get a medical aid across town for someone else who's having an emergency. So he has to deal with that. He's got to take some of his resources from the fire and send them somewhere else. So there's that. Chief Hubert, who are his last day was the other day. He's standing in the back here. He came on scene and took command. It lets Captain Hallett go back with his crew, get more things done that way, and have direct supervision over his people. Again, like I said, this is completed in less than 10 minutes. And with that, we'll just go ahead and watch the video and see what happens.
Atascadero Fire, Station 1, Station 2, respond on a structure fire to the right of San Gabriel School, 8500 San Gabriel. Okay. Copy responding information. It's a barn at the location to the right of the school, possibly occupied. Okay. With a subject to reviving, he's inside the barn and he is unable to get out.
Are you calling about the fire?
Yeah, fire.
Okay, where is the fire at?
8600 San Gabriel.
Okay, are you the resident there?
Yes.
Is there anybody in? Are you still inside?
Yes.
You're still inside the structure?
Yes, I can't get out.
Can you confirm that is VFR 23?
Affirm. TAC channel is VFR 23.
Okay, where are you located inside?
At the barn.
You're in the barn and you're unable to get out?
Yes.
Okay, we're on our way. I'm going to go ahead and stay on the phone with you, sir, okay? Hello?
I'm still here.
Okay. And you said the staircase is on fire?
Yes.
Okay. Is that your only way out, is the staircase?
Fire 7591 and 2 information. The subject's advising he's inside. The staircase is on fire and he's unable to get out.
We have two stories building with four involved, 91. one, there's a hydrant right at the driveway. I'd like to establish the water supply. 92 will be assuming San Gabriel IC.
Copy assuming San Gabriel IC, two-story building, fully engulfed.
San Gabriel IC.
San Gabriel IC, go ahead.
Are you still landline with the RP trying to determine if we have a rescue?
Affirm. We are landline with the RP. He's unable to get out of the building. Affirmative. Copy 7591 on scene. The 7592 information, the subject is upstairs to the rear of the barn.
I see copy. We're making a rescue now to the second floor.
Copy, making a rescue to the second floor.
San Gabriel IC.
San Gabriel IC, go ahead.
Okay, we have the victim out of the building. I'd like to respond to the ambulance directly behind 7592.
Copy. Tascadero Fire, San Gabriel IC.
Go ahead,
I have a medical aid, 8505 Santa Rosa. The Tascadero Christian Home, am I okay to send 7995?
Negative,
advising
engine 30 with their location, and see if we can divert them.
Atascadero Fire, copy. Atascadero Fire, engine 30.
Atascadero Fire, engine 30, location is Del Rio, 101.
Engine 30, you can respond to medical aid. The Atascadero Christian Home at the Bethesda House, 8505 Santa Rosa, for a 97-year-old fall victim with a head injury.
Engine 30, copy, 8505 Santa Rosa. Atascadero Fire, 7500,
advised,
I'm assuming San Gabriel IC. We do have knockdown on the fire.
Copy, 7500 now in charge of San Gabriel IC and knockdown on the fire.
So with that, I hope that was able to give a little better picture instead of just describing what they were seeing and what they were doing. So with that, I'm going to give them their commendation. We have each a plaque. We have a ribbon bar for their uniform that they can wear, and also a letter that goes in their employee file. So I'm going to call up the First Engine Company, 7592, if you'd come up. Captain Scott Hallett. Engineer Tom Little. Firefighter Brendan Roberts. Firefighter Steve Cochran. Captain Bill White, Engineer Christopher Robinson, Firefighter Zach Jackson, Firefighter Nathan Goosens,
and I'll call up the two dispatchers. We have dispatcher Shannon Neal. They'll also be receiving a certificate of commendation and a ribbon that they can wear on their uniforms when they decide to wear them. And Anjanette Ordonez. I've worked with Anjanette now for too long. We won't say how long since she gave me that look, but She's been professional her entire career, and we're certainly glad to have her here. Congratulations. And then for our officers on scene that night, Officer Chris Hall, also one of our canine officers. Officer Ryan Sloan, now appointed to our Detective Bureau. Officer Stephen Stuckey. And then our on-scene supervisor that night, Corporal John Taylor, also responsible for one of the best lines of radio traffic that I've ever heard. I don't think that's a good idea, guys. That's what we hire our supervisors for. So good job, John.
Thanks.
Perhaps at this point we'd like to have them all come up to the front, or how would you like to do it, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
Well, we are just honored and speechless, and but I do think we should have all of your staff join in the front. I would suggest
perhaps we won't have all of their families come up this time, though. But
you're in charge, Chief. We'll take your lead. I'm going to ask all the council to go around this way so we can kind of shake each hand, and then let's stand at the far side over there. And Councilman Sturdivant? Very good. Well, we want to thank all of you, but we don't want you to go away. A little join us in a standing ovation for these. Well, thank you. Please be seated. And before you guys go away, I'm going to ask you to help us do something else that I know you guys are planning on doing. We just wanted to kind of horn in ourselves, so to speak. I believe, Councilman Sturdivant, do you have something you could read there?
Well, yes, Mayor, I do. So let me get my glasses off so I can see. And I'd be proud.
Oh, wait, we're missing one of our firemen here, though. Don't you have another chief here somewhere? See, former couple of former chiefs here. Where are they?
They're right over there. Come on, Kurt.
Kurt, yeah.
And what?
Michelle said to invite all the firemen.
Okay. Well, good. Welcome, Chief. How many times have you retired being chief now?
Kurt, get up here.
Okay, go ahead, Councilman Sturdivant.
Well, it's my honor to read this to present this proclamation in recognition of the service of Interim Fire Chief Mike Hubert. Whereas Chief Mike Hubert has had an extensive and stellar career in the fire service, and whereas Chief Mike Hubert began his career as a firefighter paramedic in the city of El Cajon in San Diego County, where he also served as captain and interim battalion chief. And whereas Chief Mike Hubert served the city of Poway for 10 years as division chief plus 5 years as fire marshal, and whereas Chief Mike Hubert served as fire chief for the city of Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, and successfully consolidated the Aurora Grande, Grover Beach, and Oceano Fire Departments into the agency known as the Five Cities Fire Authority, then serving as its chief. And whereas, when called upon again to serve, Chief Mike Hubert returned from his quiet and leisurely retirement to serve as interim fire chief of the Five Cities Fire Authority. And whereas Chief Mike Hubert once again was called upon to interrupt his well-deserved retirement, this time to serve as interim fire chief for the city of Atascadero. And whereas Chief Mike Hubert joined the city of Atascadero's Department of Fire and Emergency Services with over 40 years of experience. And whereas by virtue of this broadly inclusive background and experience in fire safety, leadership, and management, Chief Mike Hubert was uniquely and thoroughly qualified to serve as interim fire chief for the city of Atascadero. And whereas Chief Mike Hubert joined the executive management team of the city of Atascadero with humbleness and grace, quickly becoming a valued and integral team member. And whereas Chief Mike Hubert is a resident of the city of Atascadero, making it his home for the past 16 years with his wife, Robin. And whereas when called upon and without hesitation, Chief Mike Hubert gladly stepped into the void in order to serve his community as interim fire chief for the city of Atascadero. Now, therefore, we, the city council members of the city of Atascadero, do hereby express our sincere gratitude and appreciation for the service of Mike Hubert as interim fire chief. Thank you.
And before we snap too many more pictures, all the firemen, please, the firefighters, please join us up here. That would be great. Chiefs, we'll just get you guys kind of in the middle over here. Yeah. Yeah. Luke, you can go up on the balcony, you know.
All right. Well, good evening, Mayor and council members. So my name is Andrew Luer. I'm a fire engineer for the fire department here, and I'm currently the president of the Atascadero Professional Firefighters Union, IAFF Local 3600. And we just wanted to take this time to recognize Interim Fire Chief Mike Hubert. I know he doesn't like a lot of pomps and circumstance, but we just wanted to take this time and let him know how much we appreciated his hard work, dedication, and ultimately your authenticity over the last 6 months. You came to our department during a time of transition. You picked up the torch and you ran with it, and you kept us moving in the right direction. We really appreciated the fact that you took the time to understand each of us, each of our roles and responsibilities, and ultimately tried to make a successful outcome for all of us. And I know each one of us can say that you definitely steered our futures in the right direction. So I'm trying to keep it short and sweet. We just wanted to say it's a great honor that we worked with you and that the union has a plaque that we made for you, and we'd hope you accept it with gratitude and with our gratitude and respect, and know that you're always welcome at 3:30 for our sanctioned coffee break.
Well, I know all of the council, and I can speak for our community, are very thankful for all of the employees we have at the city. They are very dedicated, especially these time of year where Public Works is out working hard. But it was an honor for us to be able to participate and witness this, and glad to see the recognition for our police and fire emergency services personnel. It's a tough job, and we're glad you're doing it. So, and thank you for family and friends could come out this evening as well. A sincere thank you from all of us. Well, sorry, friends of the lake. It's a tough act to follow. I often say when I get to speak in public, you know, we've got a lot of friends in Atascadero, friends of the pavilion, friends of the zoo, friends of the library, and friends of the lake. A lot of our community comes together and really helps do things that our community would not be able to enjoy otherwise. And again, this is especially true with our friends of the lake. We've made the Lake Park Zoo Veterans Memorial our priority as our community's event center. And, of course, we have looked to the Friends of the Lake for suggestions, recommendations of what we can do. And it's truly been a good partnership. They've done so many undertakings, not only of the additional well that's been added on service to help offset evaporation. We also have helped with some aeration, and we're going to hear a presentation from them this evening. I'm filling in a little bit, giving folks a chance to work their way out. Appreciate how folks are doing the best they can with that. But I'm going to go ahead and invite our city engineer to introduce some of the key participants in this. And I would like to acknowledge all of the Friends of the Lake members that are here this evening. Maybe you could start off with that and then take it from there.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. This is a great news item that we have tonight. The Friends of the Lake have generously donated a aeration system to Atascadero Lake. So that has not been installed yet, but we're working with Friends of the Lake to help implement this project. And I think without further ado, I'll introduce Rich Dennis. He's with EP Aeration. He's actually the supplier of the system that Friends of the Lake has been working with, and the city has been working with as well. Also in the audience is Paul Murphy and Don Lynch with Friends of the Lake. And I think if it's okay with you, Mayor O'Malley, we'll have Rich present. He's got a short presentation about the system. And then if you have any questions for him, he can, or Friends of the Lake, they can answer those for you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to do this presentation for I think will be a proactive solution for the water quality issues at Atascadero Lake. Now, Nick told me I have about 5 minutes to describe the project in a crash course in pond biochemistry, so we'll just go ahead and get right into it. Brief project description. It's a bottom-laid aeration system to circulate the volume of the pavilion area about 2.5 times per day. EP Aeration will be responsible for the aeration design and installation. It's being funded, as you mentioned, by Friends of Atascadero Lake through generous grants and donations. Project approval and implementation will be by the City of Atascadero. And once everything's installed, it'll be passed on to the City of Atascadero for maintenance and any energy costs and things like that. So this is a rough diagram of what it would look like. Basically, the circles are fine bubble diffusers that will sit down on the bottom of the pond. The yellow lines are, these are the devices here, which basically consists of 100 feet of low-density polyethylene tubing that have surgical cuts on them and framed inside of this 304 stainless frame. Basically, it's a big, fancy bubble blower. Then we have the yellow lines are the weighted tubing. Even when pressurized, this tubing will lay down on the bottom of the pond. There's no reason for it to be anchored or anything like that. The white line represents a PVC pipe that will run from, I believe you guys call that the community center. There's a pump house or vault, the pavilion, sorry, off to the side of it where the mechanical equipment will be housed. Again, like I mentioned, this is just our spreadsheet showing us that we're getting about 2.5 times 2.5 turnovers per day, again meaning we're going to circulate the entire pond volume 2.5 times, or lake volume 2.5 times per day. This is generally what the human interface looks like. These are little 1/3 horsepower air compressors about the size of a football. They can simply be mounted on a shelf like you see there. The project calls for 4 of them, and they all of the air gets injected into a manifold that delivers the air out to the diffusers. Again, these are the diffusers. They mix about 22 million gallons of water a day and 15 feet of water with as little as 1/3 horsepower supplied for each one. Stainless steel construction, LDPE. They've got a 15-plus year life expectancy. They're derived from the wastewater treatment industry. They have a cable and buoy system so that they can be retrieved if you ever wanted to, but they can be tied down below the water surface as to not interfere with recreation in the lake. So briefly, why aeration works, you kind of got to have a general idea of what causes an algae bloom. If we break it down into the basic limiting factors, you've got water, sunlight, temperature, and nutrients. You could drain the pond and you wouldn't have any algae issues at all, but clearly that's not a viable option. So how does aeration affect those limiting factors? The main thing is the removal of the thermocline. Thermocline is where it's warmer on top, colder on the bottom. That's a function of how far the sunlight penetrates through the water column. In that top layer, you have algal photosynthesis. Generally, there's going to be plenty of oxygen in the surface. However, down below that thermocline, you have only oxygen-depriving processes. Basically, it's a compost pile. In those conditions, nutrients are soluble for uptake by algae, and typically when you see a lake like Atascadero Lake that has a significant thermocline, you are going to see significant algae blooms, especially seasonal algae blooms. So basically, we blow the bubbles mix the water, we destratify the water, homogenizing the water temperatures, and that's how we do away with the thermocline. Now, the other thing that it does is, in that process, as the water goes up through the water column, its oxygen is dissolved into the surface, and because we're circulating several times per day, we're delivering oxygen to the beneficial microorganisms at the bottom that are going to consume the organic nutrients and soluble nutrients that would be food for the algae. So again, we're kind of starving the algae of nutrients. And the third way is by circulating the water several times per day. We're taking the algal cells out of the sunlight by bringing them down to the bottom. So thereby, the proliferation of algae is clearly going to be less. Some of our applications, just as our company, some of our big ones are estate ponds, parks and planned communities. That's Barney Schwartz Park there on the top right-hand side. Golf courses, I believe that's Spyglass Hill at Pebble Beach, water features, that's Halliburton in Houston. We're a full-service company. We've been around since 1992. We're local. Basically, all this is just to say that we're around. Should you need our help, you have questions, need help with service, anything like that, we're just, you know, 15 miles down the road and can help out. And that would conclude my presentation. So I'd be happy to field any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you. Council questions. I'll look to the lights here and try again. First, we have Councilman Burbeau, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Well, this might be more a question for Friends of the Lake, because your slide indicated they're paying for this. I'm wondering what the cost of this was. Possibly, but...
It's roughly 13,000 installed, and that's not including taxes. I believe you guys are probably tax exempt, right?
And is there any substantial ongoing maintenance cost, or is it pretty maintenance-free?
So the energy cost is going to be about $5 per day if you run them 24/7, which isn't necessary. We do recommend it for the first year. That can be adjusted thereafter. There are rebuild kits that are required with a compressor. That's going to be about every 3 years. $175 per compressor times four compressors. So I don't know how you amortize that, say $200 a year in rebuild kits, and then you've got air filters on top of that, you're going to spend about $25 per compressor, so roughly $300 per year.
All right, thank you.
And can I maybe just piggyback off that too? Right now we're running those fountains out there, and that's actually more costly to run than the system, so one of the things that we plan on doing with the system, it's so much more efficient and better, you know, with the turnover from the bottom of the lake to the top, that the fountains won't be ran as much. You know, they'll be more aesthetic, but they won't be relied upon as much as they have been in the past.
So is the city paying for the electricity for this, and it's actually cost less than what you're currently doing?
Correct.
Okay.
I should point out, too, that the in the industry, the subsurface aeration is actually a water treatment, whereas the fountains are more of an aesthetic feature. So you're not really getting that great of algae control out of a fountain as you would with a subsurface aeration system.
Just curious, you said that this was going to be on the bottom of the lake, correct?
Yes.
And so the bubbles are coming from holes that are in those coils?
That's right.
And so each of them have quite a few bubbles coming out per minute, I would assume.
Over a billion per day.
Are these large bubbles that are noisy and you could hear it, you know, bubbling up from the shore, or is this fairly small?
No, it's very quiescent. You're not going to hear anything in the water. The only thing that makes noise are the compressors. They operate at about 50 decibels, which is considered country quiet, and they'll also be housed inside this little room in the pavilion.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I invite any of the Friends of the Lake to offer any more input if they would like. And thank you for a very good presentation.
One of the founders of Friends of the Lake. The reason we chose this location originally was because it's the one area that doesn't get a lot of wind aeration. When you go a little around, you go around on Marchant, you get past the pavilion, they get a lot of wind action going across the lake, but that area around by the dam and that area doesn't get as much, and typically the oxygen is lower right there. So that's why we chose that location for phase one, but as it turns out, that's the area that they didn't get to do all of the dredging, and it's really important to have that there now to break down the nutrients that were already there. I don't know if you remember, they got along one side of the fill line, but there were some they couldn't reach, including out by the solar bee. So this is going to be very important to that section especially. And we'll have to wait and see on the rest of the lake. Typically, the wind aeration is good enough going across from Marchant to Lakeview, so we don't expect to need one for that part at some point, probably around the island. But this is going to carry us for a lot of years, going to have a lot of effect. Like Nick said, it's probably cheaper to run than the fountains, and they do a lot more as far as the aeration goes. So thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other council questions or comments, I'll turn it back to our city engineer. Any closing words of wisdom for us?
No, I want to thank Friends of the Lake. They've been a good partner with the city for, you know, really care about the water quality of the lake. We worked with EP Aeration and Rich and his company on kind of coming up with this design, and we scrutinized it, you know, because we're going to be taking it over once it's installed. But we've kind of done our site visits with them, and I'm guessing it'll probably be in the next couple months. Before summer, they say. So before Lake Fest, which is on May 20th. And then one other thing with the system, since it is on the bottom of the lake, you know, the vendor that we have for the paddle boats and kayaks and whatnot, they'll be able to go right over this where the fountains right now, they kind of, you know, we don't want to have all these dots all over the lake where people have to go around, although it could be maybe buoys for racing or something like that. But so it won't interfere with any of that operation as well either. So
very good. Well, thank you for that report. And again, a special thank you for Friends of the Lake. How about a round of applause from the council? Thank you. Next, we have our consent calendar. And by the way, for those of you visiting a council meeting, you sure picked a boring one. I mean, it's exciting to hear what's going on in the community, but we're not going to be working very hard tonight. The whole community is working and getting the job done. Nothing controversial. So sit back and enjoy, as we are, hearing what's going on in our community. Consent calendar item is made up of items considered to be non-controversial, fairly routine, and do not require any in-depth discussion unless a member of the council or a member of the public would like to pull an item for further discussion. So is there any item on the consent calendar a council member would like to pull for discussion? The new guy. Go ahead.
The new guy. Actually, I didn't want to pull, but I had a quick question for you.
Go ahead.
And that is in the agenda or in the minutes from the last meeting, under the committee assignments, which we discussed at, or, you know, at length the last meeting, you have me down as the chair of the design review committee.
That is a mistake.
Okay, that's what I wanted to check.
Very good.
That I was not the chair.
I'm glad you are being thorough.
Yeah, I'm happy to be the chair, but I didn't think I was.
No, I think we actually had asked a Council Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, who has been doing that for a while, and next year, you're up. Very good correction. Any other questions by council? Any member of the public wishing to pull an item for further discussion? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion on the entire consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Burbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next, we have updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. With all of the wonderful rain that we're receiving, the city is getting a lot of inquiries about storm and storm preparedness and what we're doing to help with the storms. As you guys know, storm preparedness starts long before we ever see the first drop of rain. The Public Works crews in particular have been working very hard for a number of months to make sure that if Mother Nature decided to grace us with some rain, that we would be prepared. And so wanted to give you a little bit of update on what's been going on, what we've been doing, and how we've been faring through some of these heavy winds and rain. So Atascadero Creek and the Salinas River are now flowing, and the lake is beginning to fill. We're very excited about that. And as I said, for some time, city crews have been preparing for winter storms. We have sand piles. They're filled and ready for use at Fire Station 1 and at the City Corporate Yard on Garbata Road. If the need should arise, we do have a barricade trailer Barricades are prepped with appropriate road hazard signage and flashing beacons, have been equipped with all new batteries. All of this is done well in advance of any storms. All trucks, heavy equipment, and gas-powered tools are prepped and filled with fuel. All drainage grates have been cleared, and all known trouble areas have been inspected. And due to the recent high winds and heavy rains, our crews were busy cleaning some downed trees over the weekend. So those road signs and that equipment all comes in handy when we do have those trees go. Thanks in large part to the prep work we completed beforehand, there was no major damage or flooding issues reported. However, Highway 1 between here and Morro Bay was closed by Caltrans due to a mudslide. It remains closed at this time and likely through at least the end of this week. Halcon Road at the Salinas River crossing was closed Monday morning due to flooding. And with the ground saturated and the wet weather we're receiving today, we urge everyone to continue to watch out for possibility of falling limbs and trees. And many of our oaks have been severely stressed during this drought and are succumbing to the high winds. So please, everybody, continue to stay safe. We're doing okay so far, and hopefully we see some more rains to come. Tamale Festival, one of my favorite subjects. So our second annual Tamale Festival will take place on Saturday, January 21st, from noon to 4 p.m. in the Sunken Gardens, rain or shine. So that's going to be all the way around the Sunken Gardens, East Mall, West Mall, Palma Avenue. A lot of that will be on the street so that if it is raining, you're not traipsing through the wet grass, but will be on asphalt. This promises to be a very exciting and wonderful event. For all of those that attended last year and were a little disappointed, we ran out of tamales. Obviously, we had an event that was much more well-attended than we ever anticipated. Terry has done an amazing job beating the bushes and going out. She went down to Indio to recruit tamale vendors. We're going to have over 30, or we're going to have 30 tamale vendors. And we are going to have over 20,000 tamales for sale. So we have a lot of tamales. We're hoping a lot of people will show up. She's now worried that we're not going to have enough people. I say bring them on. We're going to have a wonderful, wonderful event. Each vendor is required to prepare a minimum of 500 tamales. Categories of tamale will include sweet, gourmet, and traditional. I've had pineapple tamales and blueberry tamales, wild mushroom and rice tamales, all sorts of interesting tamales. So we'll see what these tamale vendors bring. There'll be a good variety of other Mexican food there, plus seven other food vendors if you're not a tamale fan. Don't worry, we got other food for you. And there's going to be, of course, craft beer, cider, wine, artisan beverages, and sangria. We'll have live mariachi music, Mexican dancing horses, and I've seen videos of these horses. They're pretty incredible. A tamale eating contest and a tamale judging with judges' favorite tamale and a people's choice tamale. Let's see. For the tamale vendors, we have a lot of local tamale vendors, but we recruited others from all through Southern California, from Oxnard to Ontario, so people coming from out of town. We'll have bounce houses, face painting, caricature artists, and so much more, so there's sure to be something there for everyone. The event is free to enjoy and to attend and enjoy the entertainment. But you're going to want to buy some tamales, trust me. Some of these vendors, I've had the pleasure of tasting their tamales, and they're good. Sorry. I love the Tamale Festival. And you can also be able to buy enough. We're going to have enough tamales that we can stock up and freeze some at home, so I appreciate it. This Saturday, we're going to have the Demonstration Garden Volunteer Workday. So a few weeks ago, we had Madrone Landscaping here talking about the wonderful work that they're doing in front of the pavilion, and they're donating all of that work. They're looking for some volunteers to help. The Atascadero Mutual Water Company has partnered with Madrone Landscapes to execute the educational aspects of the gardens. They need volunteers to assist with planting this coming Saturday, January 14th, outside the pavilion from 9 to 4 p.m. This will, they're looking for people to help plant all of those native plants and things there. Everyone is encouraged to wear clothing. They won't mind getting dirty, including long pants, work boots, gloves, and to bring drinking water along. Tools, materials, and lunch will be provided. And the city expresses our sincere gratitude to Madrone Landscape and all of the very generous local businesses that have contributed so much to make this project happen. So this is a wonderful project. We just need a few people willing to donate a few hours of their time to make it to complete the project. And council strategic planning. So we have scheduled council strategic planning. It will begin on Friday, February 17th in the evening, and will continue on Saturday. We'll start early in the morning, Saturday morning, and go through probably mid-afternoon, Saturday afternoon. As you guys know, this is where the council sets its goals and priorities for the next two-year budget cycle. It basically sets the stage for what are we going to do for the next couple of years? What is it that we want to achieve? Well, city staff and the council can achieve anything they want. They can't achieve everything. And so it's important to prioritize what are our priorities, where do we want to put our resources, and how do we want to do that. From that strategic planning, staff develops an action plan and a budget on how we're going to achieve those priorities, what we're going to do. We'll bring them back to the council for blessing both, and that pretty much sets out the work plan for the next 2 years and what it is we want to do. So it's very critical. You want to get a lot of community feedback and input. Obviously, you've been receiving input over the last few years, both on those projects and those priorities that we are currently working on, how we can improve them, what other things we'd like to do, what things haven't worked so well and can drop off. But any input, and I highly encourage the public to attend that day and let council know what your thoughts are. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. And I think this is a great segue to go with where I was hoping to invite any of our department heads or staff if they'd like to share any thoughts about strategic planning coming up, and then also council members. It is really an opportunity to look at a long-term big picture, big visioning. What do we want to see accomplished in our community? As we always know, often from public comment, which will be coming up pretty soon, there's lots of ideas out there in the community. And in the study of economics, they often say we have unlimited demand. We unfortunately have limited resources. That's one reason why the council has always made economic development our top priority, because most everything we want to do costs money. And so that's why you see us focusing usually so much on that. It's an opportunity, though, to kind of take a look at what we have accomplished over many years. Things take some time sometimes. But to see how we've done, take a look at from all of our community. We want to involve all stakeholders in our community to take a look at what new goals we might want to take on. But then we want to kind of winnow that down to what's achievable in the near future, what's an action plan, budgeting the resources so that we make sure those items really get done. So it really is a good time. But I think we've had good participation. I would like to welcome staff. I know our chiefs are often very involved in that, and really all of our staff then hear from the community and the council and then come back with an action plan. And I would welcome first any staff additions to that little discussion. Then I'll just ask council if they want to share any thoughts of their experience with strategic planning. So any brave staff want to follow up with the city manager? Go ahead.
Thank you, Jerry. Very much, Mayor and Council. As the Administrative Services Director, it's a critical piece of the puzzle, I think, for us. Like you say, Mayor, we do have limited resources, and especially as the economy is starting to get better and we're seeing some growth and, you know, a little easing up of the resources that we've had in the past couple of years, it is really critical to make sure that we prioritize and get those things that are most critical at the top of the list as we go through this process. So it will be really important as we look at our two-year budget.
Thank you, and thanks for your finance team's involvement. Other staff?
I can chime in.
Please.
One of the things I think has been important for us in the police department, and I think everyone would share this, is what's done at the highest levels filters its way down to lower levels. One of the reasons that we're so successful within the police department with our strategic planning is because the model's been set by council, then by department heads, and it filters down to each individual department that way. And so I think it's good for us to have in mind that we're not just accomplishing the work, but we're also setting patterns of behavior for our folks. And so we're very appreciative of the process because it helps us interdepartmentally to do our own process.
A very good point. There's a lot of alignment with our staff, has been said. Not all cities necessarily operate that way. And that's part of how we can get more done, is we are not wasting effort. Thank you, Chief. Any other?
I just want to add to, I think, I want to reiterate what Chief says, not just in the police department, but throughout the departments. This sets their priorities, their goals, especially the part where you vision about what it is you want to see Atascadero be and grow into in the long term. Always keeping those visions in mind, revisiting those visions, make sure that is where we still want to be, and adjusting. And then your priorities fall from that on this is what we need to focus on and do that. That helps the staff keep that in mind all year long, day in, day out, as they're doing their job. And I can't tell you how critical and how helpful that is for all of us.
Thank you. It was just a couple of years ago we had said that we would like to see more events, and why don't we have more restaurants in Atascadero? Well, coming out of strategic planning, we did set a course to fund a position. Ms. Terry Banish, Deputy Director with Marketing and Promotion Special Events, and it's amazing when you look back what's been accomplished in just 2 years with the special events and all of the activities, and quite a few restaurants have started up just the last few years. So that was one thing I think, very pleased how staff could really fall through on something our community said they wanted to see. Mr. City Attorney.
Yes, I just wanted to add, I've attended the strategic planning sessions. I've found them to be very beneficial. A lot of good dialogue and constructive discussions. So I've been very impressed. I would say this is an item that's not specifically on the agenda this evening. So at this point, if council members want to propose items for future agenda discussion, including strategic planning, then you can certainly do that. I would suggest that you do not get into a lot of detail and discussion about it, but just merely identify if there are some subjects you want to be added to that agenda.
I would be disappointed had you not brought up the reminder that it's not an agendized item. However, I did not ask council to suggest items for strategic planning. Just a sentence or two, like staff have done, of just a remembrance or of something you saw valuable about the strategic planning. Then we're going to cut this off. So if I would have the indulgence of just each council member just share a sentence of your experience on strategic planning.
Well, since I'm brand new, I could say I have no experience, but I have attended.
You've been there.
I have attended at least portions of the strategic planning, and so, I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for us to sit and provide guidance, long-term guidance, and strategic-level guidance, big-picture guidance for staff as to where we'd like to see the city head. I haven't stayed the whole day like I will this time, so
yes,
we'll see how impressed I am with it.
Thank you.
I think our city attorney's admonition is why I would really promote strategic planning. So I agree with everything that's been said, and as you heard our city attorney say, wait, that's not agendized. So in strategic planning, it's a bit more open. Yes. We can't talk about specifics. Of, you know, if a citizen comes and speaks at a public comment, which we do have at strategic planning, so come out, speak to us, get involved. If you have a specific issue, because it isn't agendized, we can't address it. But when we're talking, you know, strategy and where do we want to go, there's a little more leeway because that's a bigger topic. And so we can have those conversations and it doesn't feel so stifled like it sometimes can during a normal meeting.
Very good point. Any other comments?
It's one of the few times that the staff and the council can brainstorm together. That often we have ideas that bounce off of each other and our ideas morph into something new. And ideas come up that may not be on our priority list for this year, but maybe in a future year, like the CERT team was that came
yes.
up years ago and finally came to fruition after sitting for a bit and we thought about it and prioritized a little higher each year. I found it very helpful.
Thank you.
It's very helpful to go back and look at the decisions we've made, the direction we're going, and to check in and to follow up on where are we, is it really working? Is this really the best course of action or should we adjust? So I really appreciate that. And I think the biggest thing for me that I've seen the last couple of years, or actually since I've been on the council, is that with alignment of the council, staff, organizations, everyone, when we're aligned, it's amazing what happens. And that's what strategic planning, in my opinion, is it aligns us. It aligns all of us with a goal, a vision, a plan, and a way to follow through on that. And look at what's been accomplished. It's just amazing. So when we're all rowing in the same direction, good things happen.
Thank you. Well, I think that will suffice for input. Nice segue to community forum, which is Councilwoman Moreno has described a little bit. That's an opportunity for any of you in the community to share with us any thoughts you have about anything that's not on the agenda tonight, which is darn near any topic you could think of. And then also, again, we can't necessarily respond to that this evening, but you might have an idea of something that we could consider at a future strategic planning where we can talk about it more. So I will now open up a community forum. I welcome anyone to come to the lectern, share any thoughts you have. Welcome.
Good evening. Jim Wilkins with the Atascadero Historical Society. And I'd like to say to council and staff, Happy New Year's. Hopefully a lot of you saw the event that happened up at the high school last Friday. They unveiled the time capsule, pulled all these artifacts out that have been up there since 1921. And there was a lot of videotaping going on, so I imagine it's floating around there. Anyway, they were going to put it in a box, and I mentioned I'd go get an archival box for them. And I ended up leaving with 39 items. We took them over to the historical house over there, and Jim Blaze scanned them in at 600 dBi. And we now have a flash drive we're going to give them tomorrow. And we put them in all protective sleeves, in archival envelopes, and in a box. The only thing we didn't scan was the roll of plans because they're so fragile and they're rolled up, but we did take a digital image of them and archive that. So now they can blow these up and put various exhibits. Maybe we'll put one down in Lower City Hall. We'll put an exhibit down there. So out of those 39 items, we didn't get the coins and the canister themselves. So we just got pictures, illustrated reviews, newspapers, a list of the students, some of the faculty, and some various other little trinkets they put in there. So on that note, is we're up to 4,000 images that we've loaded up onto our website. So general public can go to atascaderohistoricalsociety.org and go to the archival button, and you can just search your heart out. There's a search button on there. You can put dates, names, objects, whatever you want to do, and there'll be, I think it's 399.7 photos or something. It's just shy of 4,000. There's 1,500 colony homes that are on there, and then just various other pictures of the Civic Center and downtown area and the old museum. So that's one thing that we've been doing for the general public is trying to get it set out. And on another note is, speaking of the Civic Center, is I've noticed there's another group maybe forming in the business district. I don't know if Main Street's forming, but I'd like to just put out there that the city did talk about it in 1996 about calling the downtown the Civic Center, which Mr. Lewis always referred to as the Civic Center. So I'm just kind of planting the seed that if we want to pull our history back together, and if they're history-minded groups, that that's all part of history, and we are a serious resource across the street here. We're small, but we're mighty. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Mr. Jim Wilkins, president of the Itasca Historical Society, you've done a great job. Your whole small team, as you say, has really got a lot of work done, and thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak during community forum? Seeing no one approach, we'll close the community forum and bring it back to staff. We have no public hearings. We do have two management reports, and I will turn it over to the city manager to review our negotiations with employee organizations and see where we are.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. The item you have before you tonight is the approval of the Memorandum of Understanding with the Tascadero Professional Firefighters Association, Local 3600, for fiscal years 15-16 and 16-17, along with approving 16-17 side letters and a new resolution for the other four labor groups. And we're going to also approve the 15-16 and 16-17 salary schedules. These are salary schedules that you had previously approved. They're updated for the changes that we are bringing you tonight. A little bit of background. The City of Atascadero is a service organization. We provide services. We have police services, fire services, parks, public works, roads crews, those types of things. We have 122 full-time employees. We've been up as high as 135, and we're just starting to down as low as 117 in the last 2 years, and we're starting to build back. That's about 4.1 full-time employees per 1,000 residents. Certainly not as many as some of our more well-off neighbors to the south. San Luis Obispo, I think, averages about 9 employees per 1,000 things, but we do okay. We're certainly better off than some cities. Our employee costs are about $15.3 million of our $21.2 million budget. So they are a significant part of our budget because, like I said, we provide those services for the most part. We have four bargaining units, Tascadero Professional Fire Association, Local 3600, SEIU, the Tascadero Police Association, and Mid-Management Professional Employees Association. We also have the group of employees that are not represented. They are your management and confidential employees. We don't bargain per se, but we do have a resolution with the council where the council determines what the compensation will be for those employees. Staffing has been and continues to be a priority for the city. As we've talked about, our revenues are a bit more challenged than some of our neighbors. And so employee attraction and retention is a challenge here in Atascadero. We have a lot of long-term, very loyal employees, and we want to make sure that we keep those good quality employees to provide those professional services. Those employees you saw tonight that are recognized, that go above and beyond what they need to do and just call it a day's work. We want to make sure that we keep that. And as, because of that, you guys made staffing a priority as part of your last strategic planning. As part of that, we said that we would do a salary survey. We did that in 2015-16. We ended up about where we expected when we compared ourselves to our competitors. Who are our employees moving and going to? What are those? And those are really the other seven cities here in the county for the most part. That allows those employees to stay here in the wonderful Central Coast and work some of theirs. We are, as we expected, slightly under the average of the county citywide. And what that means is that other cities can poach our employees, offer them a little bit more money, those types of things. And we experienced some of that, I think, in 14-15. 15-16, we did very well. We did not lose a lot of employees to our competitors, so your council prioritizing it has been paying off. You have asked staff to be less fiscally conservative. With our revenue estimates, we historically end up much better than we projected in our budget. You said, can you stretch that a little bit more? We want to take care of not only our priorities right now, but make sure that we don't lose our employees, because then if we lose our employees, that delays or stops a lot of that forward progress that we have. So you've done that. So those was kind of the charge. And what has precipitated this is that the fiscal outlook for 15-16 is looking better than we had budgeted. And so because of that, that opened up a little bit of opportunity for us to talk with our employee groups again. The first one I'm going to talk about is fire. Fire was under a contract through June 30th of 2016. However, our 2016, for fiscal year 15-16, it had a reopener that said, hey, if your revenues for 2015 are better than expected, you have to come back to the bargaining table and we have to talk. We started negotiations with fire in the spring of 2015 when it looked apparent that a reopener language would be triggered. We were unable to come to agreement with the fire union, and impasse was declared in November of 2015. In November of 2016, as part of a mediation session, fire proposed an agreement with a 2% increase for July of 2015 through June 30th of 2016. This is what all of the other labor groups did receive for that same period, and they proposed an additional 2.5% increase for 7/1/16 through 6/30/17. That was slightly different than what the other labor groups had agreed to. They had all agreed to a 2% for that. But in light of the outlook, the revenue outlook, in light of the trying to make sure that we are competitive and retain our quality employees, we wanted to look at that. And so staff is recommending that we approve an agreement with those raises in there. So the agreement before you has a 2% for fiscal year 15-16, an additional 2.5% for 16-17 for fire. The other four bargaining units are a little bit different. They already have approved contracts for 16-17 and had approved contracts for 15-16. Each of those contracts included 2% for 15-16, an additional 2% for 16-17. In the interest of again, keeping the quality employees and doing that, in the interest of the better financial outlook, staff is recommending that we add an additional 0.5% to all four of the other labor units and add some cleanup language. So the side letters that you have before you and the resolution before you adds an additional 0.5% to each of those labor units. And there's some slight cleanup language. For police, we had a new police recruit position. We neglected to have any language about providing any of the required physical fitness apparel that they are required to have at the academy. We added some language with that. And we inadvertently deleted a long-term position in the SEIU bargaining unit. We've still been paying Mr. Anastasia, so that's a good thing, but it was just a clerical oversight, so we have some cleanup language for that, too. There are fiscal costs to this. There's an additional $63,850, and that's for the additional 0.5% and the changes to all the labor groups. And that's our ongoing unbudgeted cost. So that is the cost that's over and above what we have budgeted for everything that's going to continue to move forward. That includes all costs. That includes workers' comp, Medicare, PERS, overtime, all of those things. We also have a cost of $99,400 that is budgeted. That's the 2% plus the 2%, so the 2% for each year, a total of a little over 4% for the fire. That was what we included in the budget numbers, and that has already been approved. But that is also a fiscal impact of this. And then we have a one-time, what we call retroactive pay for 15-16. Because fire did not, we are just settling 15-16 for fire, we owe them for that. We budgeted that $49,700 last year. We did not use it. So it's sitting there in our reserve account. It's going to hit this year, so we will have to appropriate for that. So again, what you have before you is a memorandum of understanding with fire, three side letters with SEIU, Police Association, and mid-management, and a resolution for confidential and management employees. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Council questions for city manager. Councilman Burbeau.
Michelle, could you address, last week, CalPERS, or the week before, they resolved to lower their estimated rate of return on their investments from 7.5% to 7%, I think, over a five-year period. And, of course, in doing so, that means that the contribution rates for employing agencies such as ourselves is going to go up, as it has gone up every year since about 2001, I think, or 2004. And this is a pretty substantial move on their part. It's a necessary move, but it's a pretty substantial move. And I'm wondering, I'm assuming that the numbers here, I believe, from our discussions, do not incorporate those additional retirement costs that the city will be paying as a result of that change from CalPERS?
That is correct. We do not have the exact numbers from CalPERS that we will be expecting to pay, I believe, starting in 2018 and then 5 years, 3 to 5 years after that. I'm looking for my administrative services. Yeah. We do have some ranges. We are looking at an increase of 1 to 3% for miscellaneous employees and 3 to 5% for safety employees. In addition to that, we are expecting a 30% increase in the one-time, our annual payment for back employees. These are not insignificant numbers, and they will be incorporated into future seven-year projections and certainly as part of the budget. That has been a concern and continues to be a concern as we have these rising pension costs, as we have these rising health insurance costs. These are benefits where the employees don't feel they've received any benefit, but they're a significant cost and a significant rising cost to the city. So it will continue to be a challenge. We don't think it's an insurmountable challenge. This is nothing that we can't handle. But it's going to be tough, and we've done tough before, and so we'll continue to look and monitor that.
All right, thank you. And that's why I mentioned it, we want to do well by our employees, especially with the struggle with the limited staffing we have, and they do a great job. But this is an additional cost that we're paying in addition to the increases that are showing here. And at some point, when you do get a better, set of numbers from CalPERS, I would like to know what those increased costs are on an ongoing basis. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Other council questions? Well, I would offer some input then before we go to public comment. We want to hear your input on this. I slightly disagree with the phrase less fiscally conservative. I consider it actually more fiscally conservative, and let me make my case. So one thing, everything we try to do is based on cost-benefit analysis. You have to analyze costs, but you also have to analyze benefits. I always point back to 2013, which is a very good study. We looked at our staffing's productivity, because we're really in the service business. We have a primary goal of economic development, and how do we get that done? Through people. We did a comparison of how do we do processing permits in our community compared to everybody else in the county. And shockingly, not only did our city do more building permits per city than any other city we almost did more permits than every other city combined. Now, what's really interesting is when you look that out, remember we've got a very low count of staff. We looked at, we process more building permits per staff person than any other city in the county. We almost processed more permits than all other cities combined. Now, that is a huge measure of productivity, and I would argue that that is being fiscally conservative, because when we have our staff working weekends to go floor by floor to get the Marriott opened a month earlier, that is a huge revenue generator that we got done a month sooner. That means that's income coming into our city, and we focus on that very much as well. And I've talked to many developers. Of course, everyone would like to pay lower fees. But I've talked to a lot of developers that say, you know, I'm less concerned about how much the fees are. I'm more concerned about how long is it going to take me to get my business open. We've literally reduced the time it takes to get someone up and running from a year to a month. So I think that's kind of why we make some of these tough decisions. But again, we always try to balance that cost-benefit analysis, and I think that is being fiscally conservative. So enough of that. I'm going to open up to the public, and we welcome your input on this item. It's primarily the issue before us is we've got an agreement with our employee associations of giving basically a cost of living increase, it appears, to try to be similar across the board with other cities. Is there any member of the public wishing to make a comment on that or tell us something, give us some good advice? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council, entertain a discussion, more questions, or a motion.
I make a motion go ahead. If you have something, you good?
Sorry, my apologies. Councilwoman Moreno did have her light on first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to say that in terms of this agreement, our employees on the whole are worth this and more, no doubt about it. And as both my colleagues said, it's tough, right? We have unknown costs coming from PERS increases, all sorts of things that the state puts on us that are unfunded mandates. And so while we're doing better than expected, it's still hard to do this. And we talk a lot about, you know, wanting to be at the average, and I don't know if we can reasonably be there when we can, if we can. I don't know. We don't have the TOT and the sales tax that some other places do. Maybe one day we will. I will say that I think it speaks very highly of our department heads and our city manager that we have the retention that we do have, because we all know that it's not just about money. Most people don't want to go to a place just to get a paycheck. I mean, that's important. That's why they're going to work in the first place. But the things that keep them there aren't just the money. And when we were back at the National Emergency Training Center in October doing the FEMA training, there were 33 employees, I think it was. We had five department heads there, including plus our city manager. Terry Banish, just a myriad of employees. And the feedback that we got from FEMA and from our colleagues in other cities was incredible. I had someone from another city say to me, "You have public works, finance, planning, all these departments getting along. Who does that?" And he wasn't the only one. So I think it speaks very highly of this team, and so I thank all of you for doing that, because that is very important, because we may not be paying San Luis and Paso salaries anytime soon. Not that we don't want to, not that everyone isn't worth it. It just may not be financially feasible. And so I'm grateful for the team that we do have and the effort that you put in to make this the kind of place that people want to work, even if they're not getting the top of the top salary. So I thank you, and I will, with that, make a motion to approve this.
Thank you. Councilman Sturtevant, a comment and a second, perhaps?
Actually, a comment is that we have the absolute best staff and employees of any city I've ever interacted with, so I really appreciate each and every one of you, everyone that works, council included, all of us. So we make a great team, and I will second that motion.
Thank you, and we have a motion on the floor. I would allow any discussion on that motion if there's further comment by council.
I'm pressing the button, and it doesn't seem to... I'm doing something wrong here. Maybe I had to cancel it. I did want to comment on the fact that this is not, or that this is on as a separate item. In the past, you know, I've attended a lot of council meetings, and these salary increases have been on the consent calendar, and I think while, you know, we've had the opportunity to talk about these in closed session, so in that sense, it could be somewhat routine for the council. I think any time we raise the salaries of public employees, it does warrant some discussion, and so I'm glad to see that this is on the regular agenda and not in the consent calendar.
Thank you for that observation. Council Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi.
Thank you, Mayor. I, too, share in the council's appreciation for staff. The department heads are the glue that holds us together. The council provides some priorities and guidance in terms of where we want to go, but you are the ones that get us there. And although we are not paying you as much as we would like to pay you because we just don't have it, it is a sign of good faith that we're giving this increase, which is really the top of where we can go. But I know that you know we really do appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have a motion on the floor. No further comment by council. I'll ask for a roll call.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And our next item on the agenda is Fiscal Year 2016 Annual Road Report. And we're going to turn that over to our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar, our city engineer.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Once a year, we have this annual report, as you all know. The voters were very generous in November of 2014, voting in a half a cent sales tax measure to be used for local roadways. In that ordinance, number 581, that was ahead of this vote, it really outlined the annual reporting requirements, defined what the Citizen Oversight Sales Tax Committee would be composed of. And in this report tonight is really the summation of the fiscal year that began on July 1st, 2015 through June 30th, 2016, which seems like a long time ago, but now that we're in 2017. But typically in January we do this. This is the second year we've done it. The annual report really includes financial statement and summary of, you know, the revenues received and the expenditures. Heads of revenue details, including copies of the checks and other matters like that. And then expenditure details, so copies of invoices and any kind of staff time or anything else that would go into the projects that make up the F-14 pavement management program. And then one other thing we introduced last year's first part is this community road report, which we mail out to all the residents. And it really summarizes kind of our strategy and what was accomplished, just more transparency for the city. So here's the financial statement as of the end of last fiscal year, ending June 30th, 2016. As you can see, the previous year, 2015, we ended, you know, there's only a few months that we collected on that revenue. So the ending balance was just under $500,000. The ending balance this past year was about just under $2.4 million. We received about $2.1 million in revenues and expended about $200,000. And I'll get into this detail here in a second. But the half a cent sales tax is collected by the retailers, and then monthly the city receives a check by the State of California Board of Equalization. And then those monthly amounts this past fiscal year ranged anywhere from about $113,000 to about $175,000. And then they every quarter they had what they called a true-up, and they'd send another check that might be around anywhere between $75,000 and $200,000 to kind of, you know, fix what actually came in, because it's not an exact collection or science with this, but so they need to kind of make that right. The total revenue, as I mentioned, was just under $2.1 million, and the interest that was received on the balance, fund balance, was just under $31,000. So the expenditures that were included in that fiscal year really were associated with construction costs for Alamo and Honda Avenue. As you might recall, we wanted to do a couple quick projects. We started collecting money in April, so we wanted to kind of try to get these projects done. We did get them designed and out for bid, but construction occurred after the fiscal year, so these costs with Alamo and Honda were associated with this reporting period. And then the design cost for the fiscal year 15-16 pavement maintenance project was $10,713, which was associated with some testing and design phase type work. And then also with the pavement rehab project for fiscal year 15-16, which was about $133,000. And again, that was for design, so we didn't have any construction costs associated with this, and this was partial cost for the design phase. So the total expenditure of $217,962 is included in this reporting period. Just a side note, some of the post-reporting period expenditures that we've had, as you see, I'll back up here, you know, at the end of the fiscal year, we had about just under $2.4 million in fund balance. But as a lot of these projects, they're very expensive to do, so you need to save up that money and then expend it. Since the reporting period to date, we've awarded the maintenance project, which was $234,000. We also had the rehab project, which was awarded and just almost $1.8 million. And then there was also the work for next year's project that for the design consultant services that the city council awarded in the amount of $85,550. So if you add those all up, it's about $2.1 million. So, you know, we are using the money as it comes in, but as we do construction projects, we really need to kind of save up that sum, and it's a cash flow type of thing that we're trying to balance. So, you know, you might get calls from members saying, oh, you're not using this money, but we are. It's just the reporting period does not really sync up well with construction season. If we're on a federal fiscal year where it ends at the end of September, we might be able to sync that up a little bit better with construction or a calendar year. But with the reporting period we have, it doesn't really sync up very well. The Community Road Report, it's a brochure really summarizing the road program, has an overview of the roadway system, gives background on the Measure F-14, talks about pavement management, has a summary of the project set and the work that was completed in that reporting period and what to expect the following year, and a summary of the financial statement that you just saw previously. Last year we did mail this to all the properties in town, and we made it available at City Hall and on the city website. The cost of that was approximately $3,500. We are recommending doing that again. We kind of kept a similar format to last year and kept some of that same basic, you know, pavement management 101, what our strategy is, the critical point management technique, those things. We kind of wanted to hit that home again with the residents one more year. I think next year we'll switch up the format a little bit, but for this year we wanted to capture those folks that maybe just got that in the mail and didn't have a chance to look at it. The Citizen Sales Tax Oversight Committee, 9-member committee. They are, as I mentioned earlier, responsible for reviewing this annual report and making recommendations to the City Council. They do have bylaws and rules of procedure that they adopted when they first met. And we did meet on December 14th of last year, and they reviewed the report that's in your packet tonight, and they are recommending approving it. They also endorse that the draft community road report that's also attached to your report tonight. So just wanted to kind of do a little sidetrack here. It seems like a long time ago we did these two projects, but they are part of the reporting period for Alamo and Honda. And then the maintenance project that was included, that we had design work done, includes these roadway sections. They're kind of hard to see, and I apologize about that. But here's some before and after pictures. This project is completed, so this is the 15-16 maintenance project. And I'll just scroll through these kind of quickly, and you can get an idea how the before and after pictures are. You can see it really cleans up the pavement and just gives a lot better curb appeal. And really, I look at that and I say, okay, we got some time to buy on that road now, and we can put it on the back burner for a few years until we do the next sequence of work. The rehab project for fiscal year 15-16 included these roads, Cascabel, Los Gatos, San Clemente Valley, and San Andreas. And this is ongoing right now, so there has been some work done on these roadway sections. It looks like, you know, like for instance, I'm going to use Los Gatos Road between San Marcos and Santa Lucia, that section of roadway. If you go down there and drive it, there's been some drainage improvements that have occurred. There's been some full digouts that have occurred, so you'll find, you know, half the roadway has been redone and looks like kind of a patch quilt right now. But that roadway is going to get an overlay put on it before we are done, so if any of the residents on any of these projects are watching tonight, they can rest assured we are not done with these roadways, and we are, you know, waiting for weather to be conducive for the next sequence of events. Cascabel had a lot of work done. That was really a challenge this winter with some of the rain, because there was a lot of pretty significant work we needed to do on that, but we were able to keep everybody, you know, get access into and out of their driveways, and really I didn't feel like we inconvenienced really anybody too much at all. So 5-year CIP, as I mentioned, this is for the F-14 funding, so I know we've seen this before. The first year, 4.2 miles of roadway, that's the 15-16. Next year we have 4.85 miles that we plan on rehabbing and maintaining, and we are working on that project right now. So actually we have a check-in meeting with our consultant on Thursday this week, and I think we're getting real close to wrapping up plans, and we plan on having construction start earlier this year, so we do have some of those costs included on next year's reporting period. It won't include all of them, but it will include some construction cost, and we should be able to get that project started, both of those projects started sometime in May. This is kind of further out on the current 5-year CIP, and this will be updated this upcoming winter with the budget process. There's all the roads that'll be part of that 5-year CIP. And then this is a five-year CIP for all the roadway funding that we currently have, and we are working on a lot of those roads. I know this isn't part of the item on your agenda tonight, but I kind of wanted to hit home some of these items that we are working on, those other arterial roadways as well. And I've shown this slide before. That's kind of a combined of all the roadway projects in the five-year CIP. So total is about $15 million. It includes 30.44 centerline miles, 4,328,000 square feet of pavement. And it really is comprised of almost a quarter of our roadway system. So we are touching a lot of the roads in town and really trying to get those in shape before they deteriorate much further. So tonight, the recommendation is for the City Council is to approve the fiscal year 2016 annual road report and approve the fiscal year 2016 community road report, as well as the expenditures to be able to mail those brochures out to everybody. So with that, I know Director Rangel and I will be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Council questions. I'll look to the lights. And the winner is Councilwoman Moreno, followed by...
Director, I'm glad you brought up the other roads, because so many times, you know, in passing, in voting for this, the public was, you know, you better keep using the same road money and not just supplant. And rest assured, we haven't done that. So it's really doubled our ability when you look at those numbers to reach the roads. So, Director, I'm curious, the average PCI of 49 beforehand, do we have an estimate of what the PCI of those 30 miles will be once the rehab and the maintenance projects are complete?
It's sort of a sliding scale. So some of those roads that we fix will increase the PCI, while other ones will continue to deteriorate. So, but the ones that we fix, like you right. can expect all those roads when we're done to have a PCI of 100. If you do a maintenance project, such as a slurry seal and maybe some dig outs and other things, that'll still be a PCI of 100. But that'll drop off that pavement life cycle curve quicker than, say, a road that has a full rehab or an overlay put on it. So it just has to do with how quickly it starts to deteriorate after we do the work. So the maintenance projects, typically, if the road's in good shape and we get it early and get a slurry on it and a seal, it'll still, you know, go through that typical deterioration cycle. But a roadway that we might need to, you know, not be able to spend as much money on will drop off quicker than a road that we fully reconstruct, for instance.
Okay. So in theory, I don't want to say in theory, that 49 actually at any point in time goes to 100, but it's how quickly it comes back through that life cycle.
Correct. So this is like an over, the total overview of the roads that are part of that are 49.
Right.
So yeah, that if we did all those projects at the end, it'll be a 100, but for the whole system.
Right. I would still think 100 for 23.2% of the system would raise it up maybe like a half of a PCI something anyway.
And I'll have that answer for the council this winter. Sure. when we plug in and go through that pavement management software again, and we'll get all that information entered, and
to have the rain, but the roads.
The rain is not good for the roads.
But we'll take it, right?
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. We have all council members with questions. Next, Councilman Burbeau, followed by Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, Mr. DeBar, if one of the things, being a numbered guy, I actually look at all these pages, and I'm struck on page 28, for example, we show, you know, a contract to Michael Frederick Paving for almost $36,000, and then some staff time, and I realize in some of these cases there was some design work done prior to this, to the fiscal year in question, but I'm pleased from what I can see as to the minimal amount of staff time that we're charging to these projects. And I don't know if, you know, to illustrate this, if you could, without too much difficulty in the future, show a percentage of the project cost that is going to staff. And the reason I say that is I know some people out there who are always skeptical of government, which is a fine thing, you know, we're concerned when we pass this measure that, you know, they're going to charge a bunch of this off to staff time so they can hire more people, those kinds of thoughts. And I think these numbers here reflect that we're actually spending a very low percentage of the project costs on staff time. And I don't know if that's something you could, you know, incorporate in the future, showing that the total cost of this project was X, and it, you know, this much was design, and this much was construction, and this much was staff built to stick.
I think that's staff. Something fairly easily we can do. On our website, for all of the projects that are completed, such as Alamo and Honda, we do have a page that looks very similar to page 28 that will have all of the project costs, every single invoice charged to the project, how much it was. We can easily put a percentage breakdown on that sheet when we post it to the website, so it'll be there for everybody to see.
And speaking of that website, I had, you know, one of those skeptics contact me, and I think contact you, Mr. DeBar, and he, after seeing it and hearing it, was very complimentary of the level of detail. But I think it's important for the public to know that, you know, we are putting our money where our mouth was, which is on road maintenance. The other question I have, and I hate to be a critic without having a solution, but I went over this morning the agenda with the city manager and looking at the community road report itself. You know, we do have this disconnect between a project in terms of when we get the money, then we're scheduling these projects, and in this case we awarded contracts in for these what we're calling 15-16 projects, but we awarded the contract in September. And of course, so those expenses are not reflected in the financial statement numbers at the bottom on the community road report, and yet they're listed at the very top. And so I think for the average citizen, they're going to look and go, okay, it says, you know, we have 15-16 projects totaling about $2.1 million, but our financial statement says we only spent $217,000. And so that's kind of the critique. I don't have a great answer for how to make that more clear, other than at least having some sort of a statement that, you know, on these, you know, these are the projects, but they're not reflected in the numbers below because they were awarded after the fiscal year reflected in the financial statement. So I just ask that we at least try to have, do something that would clarify that, if that's possible.
I think that is possible. I've talked to the Administrative Services Director, and we've actually talked with a couple of other people that aren't as familiar with the road projects, because that's really our audience that we're trying to hit, on some ideas on how to really highlight that timing difference and why it is there.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Councilman Sturdivant, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you, Mayor. Director, a question about, you know, when we originally went out and did an assessment of all the roads, got the PCI index, all the numbers and all that, is that ongoing? Because you got me thinking about, you know, when we're going out and we're redoing all these roads, and we don't know the time frame or how quickly they will break down, so are we paying attention and following up and keeping that assessment, a fresh, you know, look at the assessment of our roads?
We are, and the last time we did that was 2014. Is when we last assessed out of the roadway. So typically, I would propose we do it about every 4 years. I mean, it's not necessary to do it every year because it doesn't break down and change that much. But as we do these projects, we actually enter those into the software program. And then each 4 years or so, we'll go back and evaluate some of those roads. We might want to do it a little sooner or break down, you know, the city maybe, you know, into two portions, but it's nice to get it all in 1 year, and it's very doable, and that would be something we hire a consultant to do. You need the same person doing it, or the same set of people, so, because I could look at a road and say, it's probably about a 46, and then another engineer can look at it and say, no, it's a 32 or something like that, and So consistency when we're entering this data is really important into that software program, because we don't have enough money to do all the work that we'd like to do. So you know, comparing apples to apples and having the same scrutinous eye is really important in this. Yes. But we are updating that, and this winter we'll be running more CIP projects for the next budget cycle. And we'll budget to have the roadways. So in the budget, we'll have some budget costs for consulting time to evaluate those roadways in the next couple of years.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very good report. This was very easy to understand. I think the public will appreciate this information. I'm pleased to see that we're still proceeding with our critical point management methodology. I think this is something we need to say over and over. It's something that's very important. I know that there will be complaints that come in to you. I'm sure you get them about the potholes in front of a person's house. And you can point to the study and say, we already have looked and seen. But my question kind of follows up on Councilmember Sturdivant's. After a rain such as we've had, we may have springs that come up. This is pretty prevalent in our area that breaks up the pavement or causes additional problems. Will you have to go back and redo your matrix and put in new numbers, or how does this update itself?
Yeah, that goes every 4 years when we'll go and evaluate the roadways so we can really see how they break down. And we kind of, our maintenance guys are really good. They know where all these springs and everything else. I actually live on a road that I know right now, even a day after it rains, it looks like a creek is running down the edge of the roadway. So we are aware of this. And one of the things we're really trying to do is with these pavement projects, it's so important to address the drainage and stormwater issues on these roads, because it's really the thing. If you can keep that pavement section dry, those roads are going to last so much longer. And, you know, without curb and gutter sections and a limited storm sewer system in town, it's a challenge. So we get creative with that. A lot of these roads, we had the asphalt dikes to the roadway edges to help out with some of those drainage issues.
Well, I know the springs are starting to pop already. I go down Kerberil every day, and it's coming right out of the middle of the road, unfortunately. So we're going to see more of this, I'm sure.
We will.
Thank you.
And if I could ask Director DeBar to maybe make a plug for our website on reporting potholes. We do want to get those potholes fixed, and we do have a maintenance program for that. It's not part of F14, but our regular city money, to get those fixed as early as possible before they can become large and tear apart the asphalt. There is a place on our website. If you go to I Want To, there's a spot that says report a pothole. You type in where it is, and the guys usually get to it within a week or so. They're amazing.
They do.
You want to talk about if you don't report potholes, what happens a little?
Well, they'll just, quite simply, they'll just get bigger and deeper. So it'll be more expensive to repair. But the other thing is if those that don't like using the internet or going through that route, they can also call maintenance, which is 470-3148, and report that, and Tara will get that on the list, and the guys will get out and get on that.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Lots of good points made, and I would say I thought the executive summary of this document was extremely well done, and you could really understand a lot just from that 1.5 pages. I would like to just reiterate about 5 points briefly, because it really does tell us about what we are talking about. And I think we all are very thankful that we didn't raise taxes, you understand. This was something put on the ballot, and our community decided, yes, we want to raise a sales tax by 0.5 cent and spend it on roads, and we are carrying that out. I think we've all talked a little bit about what's called that pavement condition index. That's an interesting concept. Every road in our community is scientifically judged and prioritized based on what is the condition. We know what's going on with those roads, what it's going to take to repair them. And then managing everything with what's called that critical point management, CPM methodology. And there's one sentence in the executive report. It says, this methodology selects roads which can have their useful life extended the longest with cost-effective maintenance and less expensive repairs. So not only did we prioritize every road in the city with engineer staff, we are using a system where it's really doing cost-benefit analysis, where this is the next biggest bang for our buck. And I do want to kind of mention that the only thing that creates a deviation from what the engineers think is the best thing to do is maybe input by our police, fire chief, our emergency services say, you know, this is something that's a priority. Something that this council has very much stood by is we are not going to tinker with what the engineers or our emergency service folks consider. One time in my, some say would too long of a career up here, I did see a council that felt a need to tinker with that. That's only happened once in a very brief episode. I will see that it will never happen again. This council is all committed that we are trusting the experts on this, and it should not be a council decision. A lot of times folks think we could just decide to go do this road instead of that road, but we are deferring to our engineer and with some input from emergency services. And the other point I would make is people talk about staffing. One, we've got a very good finance team. They do a very good job. We've got some good finance folks on our council. Mr. Barbeau is a financial whiz kid, along with our CPA, Miss Moreno. I don't know. Where did that come from? But anyway, there is a lot of review on this from a financial standpoint, but I think we do have to work better at communicating that to the average person. But then that gets us to the average person. I think the fifth thing I'd mention is that Citizens Oversight Committee, it's made up of folks in our community, that not us, somebody from the outside taking a look at all this. And so I'm very pleased with the process we have in place on this. I think staff has done a great job of carrying this out. So thank you. If we have no other questions or comments by council, I'm going to open up to the public. If I do see we have at least one member of our Citizens Advisory Committee here, two. I recognize Michael Shaw, and your name is? Carol Simone. Thank you both for being here, and thank you for your service on this committee. We'd welcome any input from you guys if you'd like to share anything about the Citizens Advisory Committee. You'd be welcome. But we won't put you any more on the spot than I've already done. I'll move on. Anybody else wishing to speak on this item? Seeing no one run towards the lectern, we'll...
Mayor Malley, I just want to mention Chair Bill Hatch could not make it tonight. He wanted to, but had another conflict. And the CSTOC committee, as we call them for short, has been a great committee to work with, very discerning and a good group of people. And then secondly, the roads report is really prepared by Director Rangel and her staff, so I can't take a lot of credit other than the expenditures and the report.
I thought it was very well done. No wonder. Thank you. Sure. No one from the public? With that, we'll close the public forum part of that item. Bring it back to council for further discussion or a motion.
Well, I will move approval of fiscal year 2016 annual road report and approval of the fiscal year 2016 community road report.
I'll second.
So our two financial geniuses on the council, thank you. Motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Barbeau.
Mayor,
yes.
May I just clarify, does that give staff the leeway to clarify for transparency's sake the information on...
Yes, I
page 180.
I considered that as part of your staff report and recommendations. Yes. That what the motion and second
yes.
also
yes.
concur. So with that, we'll go ahead with a roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Great job, staff. Next item on the agenda is council announcements and reports. We have an opportunity for each council member first to make any announcements they'd like to do. We'll go through that first. Then we'll go through committee reports. And then we'll, after going through that, we'll all again ask if council or staff have anything they want to talk about for the future. So first, is there any announcements, just announcements anyone would like to make? Seeing none, let's move on to committee reports. And I will go ahead and start with my right and go to my left. Any of the committee reports you'd like to offer?
No reports.
I have several. First would be I attended the county mayor's roundtable. Mayor O'Malley was not able to go. They talked about emergency mapping. There's been mapping that is done for each area in the county or is in process. Tascadero was lauded because we already have emergency mapping in place. They said this was very helpful, particularly at the Nacimiento fire where staff came in from out of the area. They would hand them the emergency map. It showed all the roads. It showed the evacuation points. It showed the staging points on this map. We've already got it, so we're in good shape there. This one would be directed a little bit to our police chief regarding some problems that are going on with roads in general. They spoke at the round table about some accidents that are occurring approximately one every other day in what they're calling the Shell Beach Straits. So if you travel south and you go to Arroyo Grande from here, there's an area near Avila Beach where it always piles up. It goes from a three-lane highway down to a two-lane highway. And they said that the problem that they found was that younger drivers are not, they're not told what to do in terms of an accident. And so all of us older drivers know that if you get in an accident, you get off the freeway and you go to the shoulder. But they've been told, apparently, or don't know, that you get off the freeway. So they stop in the road or partially in the road. And so I just wanted to bring this up in case this may be something we want to tell those that teach drivers training or it's done in the schools or in some other way. But we don't want this to happen in our city. We want them to safely navigate off the road if they're in a fender bender or in some other situation. I didn't know that one. It was rather interesting. I thought it would be rather a common sense thing to get off the road. Apparently it's not. Local Agency Formation Commission had the formation of a water district out in the Shandon, Estrella area. This will be their a power given to them to participate in the SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And that will be the only purpose of this particular district, which is an oddball thing to do. But they want a seat at the table for the Paso Robles groundwater basin. So we will watch this with interest and see what input they have. Atascadero is not in the Paso Robles groundwater basin any longer. We're considered a sub-basin, but we may have some effects that are put upon us as well. The Design Review Committee will be meeting on the 18th, and we're having Mr. Putter come in, and they're proposing a miniature golf next to the old seafood restaurant near the police station. So I'm looking forward to this. I think it will be an interesting project. I'm hoping the public comes and gives us the input. I think this will be a fun one for downtown. And the water issues, the RAC, the Slo County Water Resource Advisory Committee, talked about ag ponds. And I don't know that we have any ag ponds in Atascadero. I wasn't familiar with any. But if there are any, they're going to have new regulations that will restrict the ability to create them. That if you recall in the news, there was a landowner that was associated with a wonderful company, and they built a huge ag pond and were beginning to pump water to fill it, and everybody's well went dry next door. And so this is going to be a continuing topic of conversation. I'm not sure that we have any. We do have some small ponds out on San Lucas Road and perhaps over on the 3F Meadows area. There is some standing water. I'm not sure if it's an ag pond. I just wanted to give a heads up that it will be something that we'll hear more about. Thank you.
Thank you.
No report.
I've only been here two meetings, and I already have a failure. Next week is the Homeless Services Oversight Council meeting on Wednesday, and I will be at the League of City meeting in Sacramento with the mayor and city manager, et cetera, so I will be unable to attend that. So Councilmember Sturdivant, I'm not sure you can attend that as the alternate, but
unfortunately, he's also going to be in Sacramento.
Oh, that's right. All right. So, okay, so anyway, so I failed my first meeting assignment, unfortunately.
We do take it out of your paycheck. That's right, thank you. I would just mention on our city schools committee, we do have a committee made up of two council members, and as it's turned out, now it's three school board members. They can do that because for them a quorum is a larger number than for us. Because of the Brown Act, you can't have more than two out of five at a meeting, but they can have a little more. One thing that we will be discussing, and I bring this up because members of the public have brought this issue up, some folks have said, well, why didn't the city do more to see the junior high move? Well, some of us that were around at the time think we sure did about anything we could possibly do, including supporting a bond measure. But that's, as they say, water under the bridge. But if folks have questions on that, I think it's worthy of a review. The next issue for all of us to consider is the fact is someday the fire station, number one, is going to need to move. That's an important piece of downtown property. And the Fine Arts Academy is located right next to it, also an important piece of our downtown. And I know the school board is considering some options on that property, and I think we need to kind of take up and have that discussion early on. I know a lot of times folks don't understand that we don't really have any jurisdiction over schools. We don't issue permits for them. They are directly responsible not only to the voters, but really to the State Department of Education. So it often surprises folks how little involvement we have with school activities, but it is an opportunity with this committee to have some discussion on that. Did you want to make a comment on that, Councilman Fonzie?
No, I had a question. You said they had some options. They have options on the fire department?
No. I'm sorry, we have a realtor on the board, and when you use the word options, it means something to them. This was the generic lay person saying they're thinking about different things that they might do with the property. They do not have any options to sell or buy. Thank you for clarifying that for our other realtor listeners. Just mentioning that. Thank you for covering the county mayor's meeting and the other boards that I sit on with Council of Governments, which again, it's made up of the five county supervisors and then usually the seven mayors dealing primarily with transportation road issues. Did have a little bit of review of Measure J and interesting statistics. You know, we had an 83% turnout in this last election, which is a huge turnout. Of that, in the total, 66% of folks voted for Measure J. Now, we only needed what percentage? 55%, I think, for our sales tax, but you needed like 66 and a third or something like that. And so a lot of times, in fact, some of the media reported, well, it passed. It was 66%. That's more votes than I got. 66%. 33% voted against. However, you needed 66 and a third percent to pass. So by about 470 votes or so countywide, that did not pass. However, statewide, other counties that were looking at this did pass. And so we were at an 80% of the state having this, what's called a self-help county. We're now at 88%. Statewide, and that includes folks like San Diego, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, basically every large population. So it's a very more than 80% of the counties. It's a huge percentage of the state population, basically saying we don't want to do it the way it has been done in the past. We're going to do it differently. Unfortunately, our county is still hoping to just get the money we're paying in taxes to the service that we thought it was supposed to go to, namely roads. But the prospects of that are getting even dimmer, I think, given the situation at Sacramento. I can tell you that'll be a big topic with League of California Cities coming up just next week when we're up there about roads. I say, you know, if you're not going to give us the money we send to Sacramento for roads, why don't you just not take the money and we could be on our own? But I don't think that's going to sell either. But we'll certainly bring it up. The other few things that were a concern to me that I made a point of at our meeting is three topics. There's a lot of specialized funding, what we do. It's categorical funding that you really can't move from one category to another. It's very frustrating to us and to the average person in the public. But there's a category called LTF, the local transportation funds. And that can be used for roads or regional transit. Now, there's actually some rules that require that if you've got unmet needs in transit, you are required to have those funds go to transit. Our city has had that category of funds for years. We always try to focus on getting as much as we could into roads, but that is an area that's been eroding with all the other funding. So that's going to be a challenge in that area for several cities. There's a lot of discussion about consolidating services countywide, and that's a concern to us because we did consolidate some of our transportation services in our community, which saved everyone quite a bit of money, but we were very concerned about, we didn't want to give up local control, because I've always argued we want to have, in our difficult terrain, you need specialized transportation, especially for handicap, ADA accessible, and just folks that are out in the hills needing to get to doctor's appointments and such things. And I think we're going to have to really work with our other representatives on the SLUCOG board to make sure our community doesn't get things taken away that are really needed because of our unique road conditions of just hilly terrain. You can't get buses out to a lot of areas like you can on a grid flat layout in San Luis. So that's something we're going to, I'll probably be talking about that more with you, but we kind of have to keep an eye on that important area. And then, well, I won't talk about it anymore about SLUCOG. There's a lot going on, just like Roberta has on some of the water issues. I do want to compliment Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, though. I don't think the average person in the community realizes how close we came to losing our E.G. Lewis, who figured it out, water rights in our community. We have the lowest cost water in the county, and of course it was very much of a target to just lump us in with everybody else. Roberta and I were on some strategic committees that very much fought this with the lead with the water company and other partners, and Roberta continues on to being our key person on this water area, and we won a significant determination that really protects our water basin. So again, thank you for continuing to serve in that area. We'll revisit recycling. We should have an update on that maybe at a future meeting. I think people ask questions about that periodically. Did you have a comment? Go ahead.
I'm completely out of order in terms of where we are on the agenda. I hope you'll forgive me, but I did have a call from several people, and I observed some problems with the crossing on El Camino near the old Shores station over to Sunken Gardens. Are we doing anything to repair that or to make this safer? And it seems to blink at times where there's nobody there, and then people get impatient and just ignore it.
Correct, and we did have some lights go out on that crossing. This is the one right down East Mall and across El Camino and Real. We did have some lights that went out on that. We do have that repaired. We've had that repaired for a few weeks now, maybe a month. And it is working. Sometimes those motion-activated pylons will just, I mean, I've seen them just like nobody's around or goes through them, and they just trigger it. So I don't know if it's a reflection or what happens, but We're looking at like upgrading that one in the future. There's a couple new crossings. We have the one by the Galaxy Theater across to the bank, and then the one up by the police department as well. Those are so much better. If you ever drive through those at
night. Yeah, I noticed that too.
They are so much better. They're remote, so or wireless, so we don't have any wires in the pavement. A much better performing crossing. So we're going to be looking at proposing maybe improving that crosswalk in the next budget cycle.
I think this is our most heavily used one, too.
It sure is. I mean,
it's the most potential for an accident.
There's so many junior high and high school kids that walk through there every day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that is an important area. You're correct. That was the wrong spot, but it's an important area to talk about. We will get to individual determinations or actions. Any more ideas like that we can get to right after reports, but we probably need to revisit that as a topic on the agenda. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of issues on that, and the City Schools Committee has talked about that issue as well. So I think that's going to be coming back to council at some point. Some solutions, alternatives on some of that. Is that correct?
I think we would bring something back as part of the budget, the whole budget package.
Yeah, thank you. Well, might as well call that a conclusion of my committee reports, and I think that's kind of it for committee reports. That would be a good example. You were right on track then. We were there, so you're fine. I did want to bring up one other potential action, and that is I think we all received an email from the person who has come to council several times at Community Forum and talking about the solar system financing. We have had some input during public, I think we had a discussion at one time. We did have concerns raised about that from the realtor community. We've asked for input back because we don't know. We don't want to be in the position of telling the residents what they can't do. But we also want to make sure we are protecting the community if there is a problem, and we just don't know. I do feel we need to agendize this. It's been requested several times in writing and at the community forum. I know there's folks that want to weigh into this, but they haven't followed through. My recommendation, if there's council consensus, is we just let staff work into having a presentation, inviting stakeholders, and explaining again what's this option of financing of solar systems that has some concerns by other members of the community that maybe it's not such a good idea. We need to hear it out, and we just need to make a decision one way or the other, and then everyone can go on. Right now, it's kind of unknown. Are we going to do it or not? I'd like to be definitive. So all I would ask is we're not deciding anything tonight. We're simply going to, if there's council consensus, we could put it on the agenda, invite everyone to speak. Staff would do fairly minimal report. I think we're going to be dependent upon a presentation and the folks that have concerns to present that. Staff may have some thoughts. Is that a reasonable request for staff that could be done with not a lot of staff time?
So if I'm hearing you just want to put a very similar item back on the agenda and make sure we do some outreach
to those interested stakeholders
and let them know of the night that it's on the council agenda. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is very doable.
Okay, so is there council consensus to revisit that topic and be more definitive as a council that we're done with it or we're interested?
I would say yes, but I wouldn't push it too hard. It's not a high priority. So when it's convenient for staff to put it on an agenda, do so.
Okay. I'm not particularly interested, and I don't know that we really need to do it, and I think it's just more work on the city's part.
I would say that options are good, and if it's something viable, then we should look at it.
I obviously wasn't on the council, but I was in the audience that night when it was considered, and the council voted against it. I don't recall whether it was 3-2 or 4-1 or what have you. So from my take on it would be if we're going to ask staff to bring it back, as part of the report, we need to identify what's changed because, otherwise, I don't see the point in bringing it back.
Okay, I think we have a council consensus of three members willing to have it on the agenda, which would all would be required. But I do think we are suggesting it could be limited. I don't see it as a lot of staff research. I think this is something that's been considered all over the state. It's been implemented elsewhere. We just need to have a report from those in the industry that are recommending this. There's a lot of proponents in the solar industry that think this is a good idea. There's folks in business entities, in finance, that say, you know, there is some catch-22s on this. We need to have them make the case to us, and then we can decide, is this something we want to do or not? And I don't think it was that clear. I'd be interested in seeing what we did. I think we left it that we were expecting to get some feedback that we never got, is what I recall. But you might start with, how did we leave this? And I would just suggest, do you need any more direction than we're giving you?
I think we have enough direction. So
okay, thank you.
Good.
Go ahead. Remember, we're not discussing the merits tonight.
I know we're not discussing the merits. My only concern, I trust staff to do whatever they need to do. My only concern is that the individual coming is in the business of selling what he's selling, and that's great. However, he can say, oh, I've talked to these people, and they're great, and everything's good, and this is the most wonderful thing that's ever occurred. But unless we're really hearing from other people that are concerned about it, I don't just want a presentation from someone who's trying to sell something.
Of course, every time we have a development before us, we have someone that's saying, this is a great idea, and then we depend on counter discussion. But I think that is something we can weigh that evening. Again, I don't think we can get into much discussion of the merits today, but point well taken. That's why I think we want to put it on other folks. If folks aren't credible, then they probably won't get support. Is that clear enough council direction for you? And we're hoping it won't take a lot of staff time. Is there any other council determinations or actions suggested?
If it does start taking a lot of staff time, when do we say, hey, come back to us and say this is starting to take more than we thought?
I would ask the city manager to communicate with council. If I think at any council meeting, since we've said this is not going to happen tomorrow, if in the next weeks or months that it takes, if you're determining that you want to revisit and check with council, at least you could check in and say, you know, it's looked like it's going to be about 200 hours. We may say, yeah, maybe not. If it's 15 hours, we're going to say, okay, I'm thinking.
Thank you.
Thank you. So a little more direction on that. And is no more discussion on that item, which we shouldn't really have too much more anyway. Any other topics that council members would like to bring up? If not, does staff want to bring up any item? With that, we are adjourned then. Thank you.